You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Claire Grill. Claire, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thanks for the invite.
We're going to talk about your show, of course, at Derek Eller, the recently closed Parlance. And I'm excited. I think, you know, the work was really beautiful and so interesting on a number of levels. So,
Thank you.
To begin with, let's talk about process a little bit. How you're building these, whether these come from sketches or not. I mean, these are all almost all pretty large scale works, right?
Yeah, many of them are, and one is the largest work I've ever made. And I don't work from sketches per se. I make works on paper, that are loosely based on antique embroidery samplers. Which, are you familiar with embroidery samplers?
I am familiar with samplers, yeah. My mother used to collect them. I think they're so cool, actually.
Oh, cool, me too. I've been looking at them for over a decade, and I'm still making this series. They're paint on paper, so in ways they're paintings, but I call them drawings. And they're just loose impressions of a sampler, and they're really not transcriptions. I like them for their content. They're to me really complicated artifacts of women's history, and they're beautiful. They're very beautiful. They're touched all over. They're insanely worked and held and detailed, very, very handmade, and they're also very weathered because they're antique. So there's so much time and story embedded in them that is appealing to me. And I also find them really complicated for their, you know, they're made by little girls, so they're really sweet and small and beautiful, but then they're also very heavy and kind of dark if you read them, if you read the text. And often,
right. So let me just say, because for those who maybe don't know what a sampler is, a sampler is embroidery, right? It's embroidery,
yeah.
And it's often text. It's often ABCs or some biblical text, and they're essentially done by, as you say, women, girls, to practice embroidery, but as you're saying, there's a narrative embedded in them, which is about the oppression of women, but also about this kind of I don't know what they're also saying, right? The text, that's what you were just talking about, the text in them, which, as I've seen, they're often kind of like biblical quotes, right?
Yeah, there's often like a prayer or a verse about, you know, obedience to God, and there's also often an awareness of the afterlife, you know, when I am gone, when I am in the ground, think of me, pray for me, that kind of stuff. And then it'll say like Elizabeth Pickford, age 9 or something. So there's this very, just complex mood to them that is, has been a really just interesting and rich place for me to dwell for a little bit when I'm making these drawings. And then my drawings have become, they're not sketches in the way that like a sketch maps out a painting, because I don't paint with a plan. I rather would flip through I like to have the drawings all around me in my studio, so that I can just very loosely, improvisationally borrow from them. And borrow parts of them. So it's not like a one-to-one thing. I just am very much more comfortable mining my own marks and colors and forms than looking directly at somebody else's source. I think I found that like mediating the source image through my own hand is a much more fertile place for me to look. I feel like a permission or a freedom there.
So you're talking about, it's so interesting, you're talking about the language and narratives and so much more that are embedded into these samplers that is in the small works you do that are based on those, that is part of the language that's also going into the paintings in parlance?
Well, there are, in my drawings, often there are like bits of, there are shapes or forms that are kind of reminiscent of text, but they deliberately resist spelling anything recognizable. So maybe you could say the forms look more like glyphs or strange markings that remind you of letters, but they don't spell anything. And I really enjoy that that idea of like of writing as drawing, writing that is not meant to, writing that's not dogmatic or that's not like meant to communicate one idea, but rather maybe writing as drawing or writing as like an invitation or like a proposition to look. Like maybe the meaning is in the, it's a visual meaning. It's not a like a cerebral meaning. And so I like to like pull marks and forms like that are kind of that are representative of that kind of like glyph from my drawings, and I put them in the paintings. And sometimes they get buried over and kind of changed in the painting process, but I like them as kind of like ingredients in the soup.
I like that. So, of course, in samplers, there is a kind of narrative. And as you're saying, you know, that some of that language gets into your paintings, your drawings, too. And these are, it's, but nothing direct, right? I mean, we're talking in the samplers about women, about so many things historically that were happening there that were, you know, upsetting and have a whole, we have a whole different take on it from this perspective and God fearing and all of that. The paintings itself, to talk about, you know, one of the biggest ones, Drape, the diptych.
Yeah.
That language is also in these, in a way. I mean, you have a kind of glyph in there or glyphs in there, but do you see that related in terms of, is narrative too big a word for that, or is it not that?
I feel like narrative is too narrative. Like the glyphs that you see in Drape are actually, I mean, there are probably bits in there. I'm going to try and pull up an image of it so I can speak clearly about it. But there are, I'm sure, forms that came from the sampler drawings or parts of forms. But then there's also in that painting this other kind of glyph, which my daughter, when she was in kindergarten, she and her friends made up this thing they called witch language, which was they would take a word and remove all the vowels and then rearrange the consonants, like however which way. And they would write little notes, and I found a scrap of this witch language and it's also been a very important piece of paper in my studio, an important kind of source material, because I feel like those forms that she and her friends came up with, similar to the remnants of writing in my sampler drawings, are they're like almost language, but not quite. You know, like they relate.
But they're translatable. Writing. You can translate what they know what they're saying to each other.
If you speak the parlance, you know, like if you care enough to figure it out, you can decode them. But it's not, it's kind of, it's available if you want to stop and look and be with it.
So your show, Parlance, is there an equivalent there to what you're talking about? If you there is a way to translate these if you stop and look?
Well, if you are me or my daughter or her friend, you know, there's not, I'm really not concerned with somebody, I'm not like burying a message that I intend for people to figure out. I enjoy that. It's sort of like, it's an interesting thing for me to put it in there and then see what it does in relation to the painting and all the other information that's there. Like, I care deeply about it, but I don't necessarily need a viewer to translate that into language. I would rather just offer it as something to visually engage with. And maybe you'll see that glyph or that line and think of something else. Or maybe it reminds you of a word that is completely separate from the reason I put it there. But I like that kind of like proposition, that like open engagement. And yeah, and the word parlance I thought was such a, I think it's such a beautiful word. And it is related to the parlor, which is like the most public space in a domestic space. It's the place where you invite people in, and it's a very, visually it's a very pretty word, and it feels, I don't know if it is like a feminine word, but it feels like it to me. And I think about the parlance of these different kinds of language, and then maybe the parlance of the paintings that are speaking to one another. There's also in this show shorthand writing, which my great-grandmother wrote. She was a secretary at a mattress company in Chicago and single mother, and worked her way up to head secretary, teaching herself shorthand writing, which also is a kind of very feminine form of writing that is, it's a code, and I could decipher it if I learned it and spent time, you know, figuring it out. But I sort of like it as, you can look at it as oppressive or as like this remnant of a very, of a time when women weren't treated equally, and were only relegated to certain kinds of careers. But maybe you could also look at it as this like secret superpower, secret language.
Is that in paintings like Dune, that has kind of writing like marks in it? It's in there.
Right.
Shorthand is in Dune.
That's right. Yeah. It's in Dune, and it's also in in Lop, in the backspace, the brown one. Mm-hmm. And in a few others, maybe in, I'm forgetting the what's where. It's in what's the pink one? Blank. It's kind of in a lot of them, and I'd have to like walk around and look at the paintings and find the image, find the marks again, because it's very loose. Like my inclusion of all this information is, it happens like while I'm making the painting in a very, like kind of sudden way. Like, oh, I want a mark there, and I need a mark, and what feels right. And I'll like notice a bit of scrawl or something and just put it in there. But the painting continues to go and change. And so sometimes that information is like very on the surface and kind of legible in that way. And sometimes it's half visible, or it's buried under, or maybe it's just texture in the end. But for me, I like just it's like become one of the tools in my toolkit or something.
Yeah, it's part of your iconography, your language.
Yeah, that's
your painting language.
Yeah,
that's so very interesting, you know. Now that relates more, of course, to the samplers and more, there's a sense of language in here, which of course, is entirely visual, right? Like you're saying, these aren't meant to decode or figure out. You could speak to it as the paintings talking to one another, but just as the viewers are looking at some other work, all painting isn't like that, but that's your language, and these are some of the sources you seem to be drawing on, right? Samplers and so for the very largest ones in here, which I think was Drape, maybe the diptych, how do you see that differing from Dune, in terms of its, if we can say language, maybe I shouldn't be talking about language so much, but it's so interesting what you're saying, and I know there isn't like a narrative in here, but the paintings have very different kind of feelings and moods and expressions in a way, right, between like Drape and Dune. Is that?
Yeah, probably. I feel like Dune happened much more slowly, and Drape happened very, very quickly. I don't know that that's apparent, but I don't even know. I feel like I don't think about what the difference is when I'm making them, or what the mood is, or the speed, or the quote-unquote narrative. Like they come very they come as they come, and I don't, like I said, I don't have a plan for them. I might have an intention to make a bright red painting, for example, because I feel the show is, or the work in my studio rather, is looking kind of gray, and I want to make a bright red painting. Or then if that painting is too I don't know, sure of itself, or like came too fast, or doesn't look to me like it's lived or has any secrets to keep, my impulse is to cover over it, or quiet it down, or like push it away and change it, because it's not ready. Like it needs to experience more. And like that red painting turned into the painting in my show called Brush, which was covered over with metallic white, like metallic pearl white paint. And it's a really strange color. And it, that's the story of that painting. But like Drape, I really wanted to make a big, big diptych with two different colors, just kind of to keep things fresh and try something really new. And I knew I couldn't put it on the table, which is how I prefer to paint. I really prefer to paint horizontally on the tabletop, but I can't reach the whole thing if it's flat. So I had to paint it on the wall. So there were some like difficult conditions about its size that, that caused me to paint it really I had to go fast. Like it was going to kind of seize up on me in a number of days. So there was something very, very freeing and urgent about making that painting. And also I didn't know if it was going to like come to me that fast. Sometimes they don't, like sometimes, like in the case of Brush, I do all that I see I want to do in one kind of in one go. And I don't mean in one day. I mean in one like a period of time where the paint is malleable. So maybe like 4 days. And maybe they aren't there yet, or that, they're just not speaking to me yet. So I didn't know it was going to work that way, but I felt when I made Dune that it was, there was enough like integrity in the ground or in the, like the substrate was doing enough to the paint to make it interesting, and to make it feel like there was movement and breath in that painting. And also when you paint so large, I can get all my faces in it. So I'm seeing all the little nuances and I'm not worried about what the thing is going to end up being. I'm just like worried about the part that's in front of me. And I'm really, really responding to the paint. Like maybe it's the little chunks of dried paint that got stuck on the pilly part of the linen and made a little track from scraping across the linen. And like, I'll notice that thing and I like to, instead of like taking it off or, my impulse is to shine a light on it, you know, like emphasize it, or maybe it's like, or cast a little shadow or do some sort of like, I don't know. I really want my paintings to feel like the whole, like I care about the whole thing, all of it up until like the boundary, the edge. And sometimes I even put like a little border, like a little tiny line in parts of it or as like a punctuation mark, you know, like, yeah. And Dune was a slower painting. Like it just was a lot of looking, a lot of looking and slowly seeing those like pinks, those very pale pinks that were underneath kind of move forward. And then like, I don't know. They all have such a different story. I really think of them as all having kind of their own individual conditions. But hopefully the ones that I choose then for a show are speaking some kind of language to each other, either like, I mean, often it's about color for me. Like I really like some kind of harmony through dissonance or something. Like they're all planets in a solar system or something. They're different from each other, but they relate somehow to some central language, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm so glad you shared that. I mean, just to bookend this with what we started with, samplers. You know, you're collecting the samplers, and I'd love to hear more about that because I'm always looking at samplers, right? Mm. When I go to antique stuff, but I never end up buying them. You know, I always say, oh, that's really interesting, or well, that one's falling apart, or I kind of like that phrase. But you know, you're buying them, and I kind of grew up looking at these and reading some of those phrases and thinking, like, what does that even mean? You know, because I didn't have a religious upbringing at all.
Oh, yeah.
So as you're buying these, what is the motivation? It is that language that we're kind of talking about, or it's much more. It's also an artifact of a certain time and a reflection on what girls and women had to go through. I mean, what's your impulse? I mean, of course, it's also just visual, right? For me, it's also visual. Like some of them are really cool. Some of them are kind of very kind of rough looking. But yeah, I'm just curious.
That's such a perceptive question. And I appreciate that question. I've never bought a sampler, just to be clear, because they're expensive. They're
exactly.
Yeah, they're antiques. but I look at pictures of them. And for me, I think that I never grew up with this kind of artifact, but I grew up in a huge family of a lot of women. My mom's one of nine. My dad's one of seven. And all of my aunts and my mom, they were stay-at-home moms. And they care really deeply about their homes and their children and their wonderful, you know, beautiful things. But, like, you know, they could name everybody's china pattern and silver pattern going back generations. Like the care for those kinds of artifacts that are about beautifying a home is, it runs real deep. And it's beautiful, and it's also, to me, kind of melancholy, and kind of speaks to the history of women being kind of situated only within the walls of their houses. And I had been thinking about I had been looking at old family photos of my mother's family and my grandmother, and making figurative work that was based on those photographs. This was probably 15 years ago. And I started looking at embroidery samplers around that time, and I just enjoyed that they were like adjacent to all of that information. They weren't china, they weren't silver, they weren't lace, but they were, they remind me of those stories or those feelings about those women. I think there's something about them being a little bit removed from something personal, but kind of adjacent to it, that feels freeing for me. And also the fact of their being so handmade and so weathered, like most of the images that you can look at online, you know, they're faded or they're stained or fraying. And I like to let all that stuff be a part of it. Or I like the dissonance, I guess, that causes, as opposed to if I were to look at like my grandma's teacup collection, which I tried to make some works about, she collected these like blue and white teacups and gave them to my mom. And I tried to make work kind of pulling from that visually, and it just was too pristine, I guess. It was too, like, too clean. There's like a dissonance in the fact that I think that the samplers are they're not painted, they're constructed. Yeah.
That makes sense. So interesting to hear that. It's been great talking to you about all of this. There's of course links here for listeners to learn more about the show, see more images. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Oh, I am reading Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. I love that book so much. It's just very beautiful. And it's Christmas time. And I'm also reading Hello, We Were Talking About Hudson, that wonderful book. I think it came out like a year ago or so, about Hudson, who had Feature Gallery, and it's a beautiful collection of reflections from different artists and gallerists and friends of Hudson's who talk about what a great dealer, but more important person and artist and friend he was. And I highly recommend it. It's so good. Very pure. It was very pure.
Thanks for sharing that. And again, I want to thank you for your time today. And I wish you well. And a happy holiday. Thanks so much for
you
talking
too.
To me today.
Oh, thanks so much for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.